Jayam Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Paribhrajakacharya Siddhara Siddhisha Srimad. His Divine Grace Shri A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki. His Khan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki. Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi Ki. Nama Acharya Srila Haridasa Thakur. Fame Sega Host Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Radhar Srivasari Gopi Bhaktivedanta Ki. Shishi Radha Krishna Go Gopagopina Shamkunda Radha Kodi Giri Govardhana Ki. Shri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki. Shri Mayapur Dhamma Ki. Ganga Maya Ki. Jamunamai ke, Bhakti Devi ke, Tulasi Devi ke, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ke, Jainatai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Guru.
Ah, okay.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Continuing Canto 1, Chapter 6, Text 20. How Pariket received the age of Kali. This material world is a sort of prison house, as we have several times mentioned. The demigods are the servants of the Lord, who see to the proper upkeep of the prison house. These demigods want to see that the rebel living entities, who want to survive faithlessly, are gradually turned towards the supreme power of the Lord. Therefore, the system of offering sacrifice is recommended in the scriptures. Right? So this whole idea of this upliftment, this is all being done because that's the purpose of the universe. Right? You have the universe, and we'll say is, okay, this happened, and this happened by chance, and this bug over here burped and like that, and changed the whole thing like that, and you know, Japan was created like that, and then later on the butterfly flipped the wings and it was destroyed. You know, the whole thing like that. So the difficulty comes up is that it's not explaining why it's there. Right, everything's personal. Otherwise, why do we need to know? If it's not personal, why do we as people need to know? If it just happens, what do you care? Right. So the whole idea is that the universe is created, maintained, and destroyed by the Lord, but there's a purpose behind it, and that purpose is to uplift the living entities, right? To bring them towards the Lord. That's its only purpose. It doesn't have another purpose. I mean, it's a prison, so of course, then you keep those who are not in the attitude of serving Krishna, then you keep them so they don't bother anybody. But the idea being that it should be how to reform, how they can come back to their natural position. Right? So the demigods, then they take part in that process. So then naturally, then the Vedas are recommending, therefore there's sacrifice, because sacrifice means you're giving up something voluntarily for someone else's benefit. So you're learning to do that. So we'll start with ourselves, the benefit you'll get, family, extended, you know, the community, and then ultimately then, you know, that one will get the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So that has to be appreciated that, yes, the place has to be managed, but it has a purpose. Its purpose is to uplift the living entities. Right? It doesn't have a different purpose than that. So, therefore, then, it's managed. So you have the technical points of what management is. Just like, you know, people have to eat, so therefore, then, you cook. You understand? But it's not that people eat they don't live to eat. You understand? The eating is there to support their life. So the same way as we don't live for management. Management is there to assist in life. That's why it's modern concept of the career lifestyle and everything like that, that's not real, because then what's it for? What it means, if that's what you get, you work so hard, you may get lots of facilities, but you don't actually get any really personal satisfaction, why would that be the purpose? But if we don't talk about it, people are willing to do it because it seems like the social prestige and that amongst themselves. Everybody else thinks they're a bunch of idiots, but amongst themselves, they pat each other on the back and think that they're very special. Does that make sense? You know, one's talking about, yeah, you know, I had to, you know, fly out to, you know, this place like the other day and all that. And, you know, we went business. It was quite nice and like that. And, oh, business. Okay, right, nice, yeah. Oh, you've gone business? Well, generally, I don't go. I only go first class. You know, you have to be able to do that. That's their moments of happiness. You know, and that's kind of like it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that if that's life, then why work so hard for a few moments? You know what I'm saying? You know, you don't have here, but let's say like in Australia down there, or you go down to Bavaria like that, you know, that he can drink one more, you know, tine of beer than you can, you know. So then, you know, they get their pleasure out of that. You know, I've heard about it when they have the big beer fests. You know, everybody comes and they're very enthusiastic. Then in comes the, you know, the acharyas, these big, fat guys. Everybody moves aside. They respect them because they come and they sit down and they drink, you know, literally everybody under the table. that. So, you know, why that? You know, all that work for that. So that means there must be something more. Right? And the something more is what they don't talk about. The guy that hires that guy, that professional, he's at home, he's having time with the family, he's doing all that stuff. Does that make sense? You know, so the point is there's always something more, and it's always personal. So this personal aspect has to always be considered. That's why we can't say is that the perfection of management is more important than dealing with people, than the relationships. You know, you always have to consider that. But of course, when you're dealing with relationships, you're dealing by the standard of what's a proper relationship. So if someone's not dealing properly, they won't necessarily gain the particular attention or, you know, facility that they expect since they're not behaving properly. Right? So then if they say, oh, but you're not considerate, but you have a measurement. That's the whole point, is that the Vedas give a measurement. You can judge things by that. Otherwise, the modern thing, it just keeps moving all the time, depending on who it is. Does that make sense? It's always adjusting. It's always shifting. So here is that the demigods, then they're serving the Lord in trying to help the living entities come back to Godhead. And so then the devotees, then they're always categorized with the demigods. So they're doing that same work. So that's what it is. So in other words, Krishna is trying to reform the living entities, bring them back to Godhead. So therefore then the demigods are working for that. And then that means they're providing facilities by which they could be Krishna conscious. Right? And that includes just down to the normal, ordinary kind of things. So it makes sense? Because all that's required. You need air, you need light, you need space, you need all these things. The materialistic men want to work hard and enjoy fruit of results for sense enjoyment. Thus they are committing many types of sins at every step of life. Those, however, who are consciously engaged in the devotional service of the Lord are transcendental to all varieties of sin and virtue. Right? So it's important here, as we notice here, sin and virtue. Right? It means the materialist, he's willing to perform all kinds of sin to get whatever he wants. Now, if what he wants to do is in line with pious things, then he gets credit for that, all the better. Like that. But in any case, they're willing to work very hard to get their fruit of result. Then from that, they'll enjoy, right? So work hard, play hard, that kind of thing like that. Because if you work less, you get less, you enjoy less. So they want to enjoy more, but that means you have to work more. It's always balanced. It's not you don't get anything outside of that. So here is, they're not worried about this, but for the devotee, they are consciously engaged in the Lord's service and not worried about virtue or sin. Now we'll naturally generally think, oh, we avoid sin, but we're also not interested in piety. That's a very, very important point. Because this is the one point, because we have to remember, and when Prabhupada talks about it, if a transcendentalist, you know, falls from his position, where do they fall to? Right? Philanthropy, altruism, you know, charity, nice, nice stuff. They become nice, nice guys. We have to remember that if one slides from one's position of being spiritual or transcendental, that's the next stop. Right? Because you've come to a proper platform, that includes all piety. Right? Devotional service means it's the most pious activity because it's beyond the mundane piety. But if you slide from that into the mundane, you know, you don't get sin from the transcendental, so the piety is converted. The spiritual is converted into material. And so you can relate to it, because let's say I'm working for Krishna, I do nice work in a nice attitude, I cooperate with everybody and everything like that. Now if I remove Krishna from this, then what am I left? Doing nice work, you know, in a nice way, being nice to people, and you understand? So we have to be very, very careful about that. Because so we'll think that virtue, because as I mentioned it, by the general standard of world religions, virtue is called spiritual. But in the Vedic, virtue is just the normal platform to function from. The spiritual is beyond that, transcendental is beyond that. You understand? So that's the difficulty comes is that we'll say is virtue. And then the difficulty comes is if one's not from the Vedic background, who defines virtue? Does that make sense? Yes. Means spiritual is included in transcendental. So if you're having a general discussion, you can use either term you like and it'll mean the same thing. But in here where we're showing that hierarchy, then we'll make a distinction. So probably I'll use spiritual. Spiritual means the liberated platform. Means it's not material, it's on the spiritual platform. But transcendental, he's putting, is that that means the relationship with the Lord and the devotees and the interaction based on bhakti. So if they're just doing a general thing about the material world and the spiritual world, you're going to use either spiritual or transcendental. But if you're showing the difference between the liberated platform and the devotional platform, then you use spiritual and transcendental. Does that make sense? So in here we're just making that distinction. Otherwise we think, oh, it's just almost there. No, it's got a ways to go. Because we may have virtue, but we've made it up. So that'll be lower than virtue that's given, directed by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Right? Does that make sense? Then that virtue then has to be engaged in the pursuit of the spiritual platform. Right? And that platform has to be used to serve the Lord. So actually, this modern philanthropic kind of platform is not actually that elevated. You know what I'm saying? You're someone who's following the Vedic culture is automatically situated higher than them. Just automatically, no matter what they're doing, is still higher in consciousness. So we have to be very, very careful that because it's virtue, we don't take it that it's automatically that's good. Good means it's connected to Krishna. Bad means it's not connected to Krishna. So virtue not connected to Krishna is just nice bad. You know what I'm saying? Then there's bad to the bone, right? You know, that kind of... Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's like this. You have layers of badness. Yes? Yeah, because that's means. In other words, the closer you follow the laws of nature, the better results you get. So, those persons who are successful, it's because they're following the laws. Those who are consistently successful, it's because they continue. They have that value. The other ones might do it by accident, and then they become proud and like this. But generally, those who are able to maintain it, they're not proud about it. They just know this is the way you do it. You know what I'm saying? It's just like that. You know, it's like you take the garbage, you put it in the bag, then once a week you take it out and put it out, you know, next to the street, and then the garbage, you know, collectors, they take it, or the sanitation engineers, or whatever they're called these days, according to the politically correct, appropriate position, you know, like that. So the if you do that, it works good. If you just open the window and toss it outside, then seemingly from the house's point of view, it's done, but from outside, it's not. And then it attracts all kinds of, you know, living entities, and all kinds of stuff happens, and neighbors, and then pretty soon the government will be there, and, you know, all kinds of stuff will happen. So that's the point, is that why practical is not enough. It has to be practical in line with the direction of the scripture. So here, he doesn't know the direction of scripture, but from previous lifetimes he's followed scripture, he has the piety, so he has the karma that he does the right thing this life, though he may not be able to explain why. He just knows that, okay, you're dealing with people, people are the ones that give the money, you get your money from people, so if the people are happy, they give you more money. Right? So if they're not happy, they don't give you any money. Right? So it's just a basic principle. So it's a matter of, and they're happy because of the mind, so that mind means their experience, and so then you're looking at the experience they get. So if they have a good experience, then business is good. You know, that's always, you always have to create that element, that security, those kind of things, that trust, all those things. So the whole those who are successful knows that's how economics works. Others will just say, no, if I buy this and I sell this and I do that, that'll make money. They make some money, but they don't make that kind of money. These big or on the top guys, they know that this is how it works. It works because of people. You understand? So that's the thing. The lower down you are, the more you think it's the mechanics. The higher you are, you know it's personal. Though you may not be doing it for a understanding the personal position of the Lord, you know, so it may not be necessarily theistic, but the idea is that they understand it's you're a person, everybody else is a person, and you get benefit from other people, and the only way you get benefit is they're happy. At least sustainable. You know what I'm saying? You can do it by fear and all these things, but generally that doesn't last that long. And then at some point it falls apart. Does that make sense? So, in here is that they're understanding virtue. They make money because of virtue. But we have to appreciate is that virtue is what's used, but it doesn't mean that virtue itself is important. So that's why they're transcendental to all varieties of sins and virtue. Otherwise, then we'll say, "Oh no, but that's, you know, that's not how people are doing things these days. We can't do stuff like that." But the point is no, there's an actual transcendental position, and we act according to that. People appreciate it or not. There's always going to, no matter what you do, someone's not going to like it. That's guaranteed. So this idea that everybody will like is an illusion. You don't understand what we're dealing with. Right? It's just like, let us say, I have a dog and I have a horse. Okay? So now, I have an apple. I show it to the dog. You know? He might not even pay any attention. He might, at maximum, if he's really hungry, come over and sniff it. Then he'll back off because it's an apple. You know, you show that to the horse, you know, hopefully you keep all your fingers. You know what I'm saying? The same time as, you know, you get out your can of dog food, which unfortunately probably is made out of the horse, then the horse is not going to be interested and the dog is. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the... That's the thing, is that you cannot, there is no system. That's the problem. The modern kind of philanthropic position is there is a position where you can please everybody by mundane endeavor. It doesn't exist. It's a total illusion. The only thing that actually can work for everybody is transcendental. Right? Because if you look at it, let's say you have a club. Basically, all the people in the club are of the same kind of nature. There's a variety within that nature, but they're all within that. Like if you go to the dog kennel, there's a variety of species of dogs, but they're all dogs. There won't be a cat there. You know, there'll be dogs. So, but you see within Krishna consciousness, then you have the wide range of backgrounds and mentalities and all that you will not find in any other system, in any other philanthropic, it won't be there. You know, they may be from, but let's say we're doing some social work and all that, and we have people from, you know, 30 different countries, okay, but they're all from the same mentality also. You know, they all have that kind of mentality. But you see, Krishna goes way beyond that. Does that make sense? In other words, those people in the club, if they weren't part of the club, could be friends. But within Krishna consciousness, some will be friends, some not, but a lot of them, they would never associate with someone from that kind of mentality. So that's the point, is Krishna consciousness is the only transcendental thing. It's the only thing that can hold everything together. And then that structure that's given, then we see probably gives to the Vedic system, the Varnashram. Because within that, you can stick all the other religious things very nicely. It's a good support. Does that make sense? So from the spiritual activities, then we have the Bhagavat, the direct. That's then formalized by the Pancharatrik, because we need regulation. And then it's supported by the Vedic. And so it gives a very perfect thing. So, but we have to be very clear that virtue is not the point we're looking for. It's transcendental. Does that make sense? So in other words, we're nice because it pleases Krishna. Krishna wants us to deal respectfully with all living entities. That's why we're nice. Not that being nice is good. Does that make sense? That's the whole. It just like, let's say, Is that? Okay, the devotees. Their activities are free from the contamination of the three modes of material nature. For the devotee, there is no need for performance of prescribed sacrifices, because the very life of the devotee is a symbol of sacrifice, right? Because it's all for Krishna. So you're already, everything you're doing is already sacrifice. But persons who engage in fruitive activities for sense enjoyment must perform their prescribed sacrifices, because that is the only means to get free from the reaction of all sins committed by fruitive workers. Yes. So they're not going to do an activity unless there's a benefit. The devotees are doing it because it benefits Krishna. So that means everything they do is sacrifice. Right? But on that kind of level, the fruitive worker, then they just will do something big. Because then they can see, yes, now this is a good thing, and this is being done for a higher purpose, then they're getting the benefit. But on the ordinary things, they consider that all theirs. Does that make sense? So the life is theirs, but when they do a sacrifice, they can, during that time, try to control the senses, behave properly, give in charity, you know, deal nicely, make all the proper arrangements, follow the scriptures, follow guru. They'll do that. So they have to do that. And then from that, then they'll get their sense gratification. But the devotee, everything they do is connected to Krishna, and so they don't have any, they don't have a separate thing that they have to do. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Sacrifice is the means for counteracting such accumulated sins. The demigods are pleased when such sacrifices are performed, just as prison officers are satisfied when the prisoners are turned into obedient subjects. Lord Chaitanya, however, has recommended only one yajna or sacrifice, called the Sankirtana yajna, the chanting of the Hare Krishna. The chanting of Hare Krishna, in which everyone can take part. Thus, both devotees and fruitive workers can derive equal benefit from the performance of Sankirtan Yajna. So, even though there's material desire, you still will get your benefit by Sankirtan. And for the devotees who want pure devotion, they'll get that by Sankirtan. So that's the thing, is this one Yajna makes everything work. Okay? Does that make sense? So, that's what we're organizing. We're managing Sankirtan. Right? And do that, then there's a base, so there's a temple, people can regularly come there, take part in that. We go out for programs, we go traveling, we do so many different things. Then people come and take part, we take care of them. Those are more serious, then we cultivate them, train them. So it's all part of the Sankirtan mission. So all that requires organization. But one has to understand is that it's for the Sankirtan mission. This is the sacrifice. Other things are not. Right? So all the considerations of making nice arrangements are because it's nice for Krishna. Not that it's nice on its own. Does that make sense? It's important. Otherwise, one won't be able to tell the difference between, non-theistic concepts and theistic. You can't see it in relation to Krishna, you won't be able to tell the difference. Does that make sense? Because it means we're doing things trying to be nice for Krishna, but we're taking it that the niceness is the active principle. No, doing it for Krishna is the active principle. Does that make sense? So then we'll get distracted by the vessel. You know, just like, let's say you serve something in a very nice vessel. Right? And so then people catch that it's about the vessel. It has to be a nice vessel. So then someone's going to get one vessel. No, no, it has to be that one. But then you notice that there's nothing in the vessel. But they don't notice that. No, because it's correct, because it's this vessel. You know? And then you say, no, there has to be something in it. That's more important. No, the vessel is what's important. You understand? So the point is if one doesn't catch how it's for Krishna, that part, then what you're engaging in Krishna's service, then the difficulty will come. We can't tell the difference between what's spiritual and material. And then of what's material, what's recommended by the Vedas and what's not. Like that. You understand? Because whatever it is, we'll always say, because we're doing it, you know, Atmavan Manyate Jagat. You know, Jagat means the universe. So whatever I'm doing, we always figure is good for the universe. Right? So therefore, whatever we're doing is universal. Right? And as soon as you use the word universal, then immediately, you know, hey, say, the music from the heavens plays and everyone stands back with reverence and all that, and you know, stuff like that. That makes sense. Yes? Yes. The point is we're looking at it that they're regulating their life with the idea, you know, due to some degree of God consciousness. So that's always going to be good, right? But if they make the mistakes of thinking it's simply their secondary rituals by which they express that that's the important thing, then they're making the same mistake as any transcendentalist could make. Does that make sense? So in other words, that they're engaged, that they're willing to acknowledge the authority of God and willing to regulate their life according to that authority, that's good. But then how they're regulating it and then the attitude by which they do regulate it, then that can always, you know, there's always work to do. Right? Because the standard is pure devotion. Does that make sense? So as long as they're not arguing over those things, the principle is that that's what's important. That's what holds it all together. So in other words, it's again the God consciousness that holds it all together. Because if you look at the secondary, then each religion is different from the other. And within one religion, they're totally different from the other. And within one section within that religion, they're totally different from each other. You know what I'm saying? Like here you have the Lutherans, but then within the Lutherans you have the main state and you have, you know, one group that has their own idea, right? And they, both of them don't really think the other one's doing the right thing, right? And Lutheran's just part of being part of the Protestant. Protestant's just part of the overall Christian thing of what do you call it? You know, you have the Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, and Oriental. So each of those has so many divisions in that you end up with hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of divisions. And each one thinks that the other one's a little bit off. You know, so I'm saying. So, but if you look at it, that they're all trying to be God conscious, that's the common element. And that's just within that group. Then you add in the Jews, the Muslims. So they're all just trying to be God conscious. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and then we're saying all those branches, and then that's just a branch of the Abrahamic line. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, stuff like that. So, by seeing the God-conscious element, that's what holds everything together. That's what's universal. Nothing else is universal. You know what I'm saying? Krishna is universal. He's everything. So, yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
By association. Because otherwise, on our own, we may think it's going nicely, but by association. No, we read Prabhupada's books, we're with the other devotees, we're hearing and all this. Then you see the various angles that Krishna consciousness is being presented. Then from that, we can take that and look at that within our life. It's always going to go back to authority. Because otherwise, from our angle, we're always doing fabulous. It's just the way it is. See, is that you don't want to deviate, because then you're not Krishna conscious. Not Krishna conscious, not pleasing to Krishna. Does that make sense? And so then, in here, as we're talking about these fine things, because we'll be looking at it, but this is just regular Krishna conscious. Yes, but that's what we're dealing with. Then everybody, depending upon their particular situation and service, they apply that principle into their area. You know, it's just like, let's say, if you're working in the kitchen, then you have to be careful you don't cut yourself or burn yourself. Right? So, but it's not about cutting yourself or burning yourself. It's about cooking. Does that make sense? So, it's about Krishna, but when you're managing, then you can always get distracted by it's the mechanical, just as you just think it's just a knife and you're sitting there and just like this and all like that, while someone else can cut 10 times faster, you know, get things done. So the point is it's everybody has where they have to watch. So in leadership, his point is if you're leading people back to Godhead, that's great. If you're leading them, you know, into a ditch, then, you know, what's the speciality? Everybody's in the ditch. You know, we fell on this side of the ditch, you know, but they're all on that side, you know. We're on the good side of the ditch, you know. Does that make sense? So one always has to see is that if these things aren't there at all these points, then and that comes by not being aware. If you're unconscious, that's where you get cut. Right? So generally you never get cut when you're fully conscious. When you get cut, you're actually surprised. Why? Because you weren't conscious. Does that make sense? So that's then what we're seeing here. Because we have to remember, here is Purikit Maharaj, and then what's his mentality? We may look at the technique, but there's a mentality of why he would even value this. You know what I'm saying? Yeah? You know, like the cow and bull are being abused. So by the modern context, Purikit wouldn't get involved because he won't involve himself with abused animals. We'll only support animals that are being properly taken care of. So we're not going to, we can't get involved in this because, you know, what Kali's doing is not supported. So, you know, it's abusive. So we ourselves won't get involved. But we see Purikit does get involved, because he's trying to correct it. You understand? So he's doing proper activity. Well, we don't get involved. That's called akarma, means doing nothing. Karma means you do something. Akarma means I do nothing. So that's also considered within, you know, you'll get a reaction for doing nothing. So it's not considered glorious. Though in the modern context, it's considered a very thoughtful and dynamic, and, you know, really doing something. By doing nothing, I'm really doing something. You understand? So we see is that these subtleties of mentality have effect on what you actually do, how you use the secondary. Because otherwise, if we discuss just the secondary, then the problem comes is that we won't know how to use it. Because the point is if we can't follow, we can't lead. There's no leader who's a leader if he's not following. Does that make sense? Yeah. Maybe you can also reading, we can point out. You know, by reading, you see, you analyze that, connected to. Or it's just you're with other devotees. You see how they do things, and then how they do the mentality, you know, that mood that's there, the technique. Then you compare that to what you're doing. So it's not that you have to have people that just come in and tell you what's wrong. It's a matter of setting examples. So that's why also in leadership, it's not about telling everybody what they're doing wrong. It's setting the example of what you should do right. Does that make sense? And then from that, you can compare. And then if they need, they can point out. But it's in comparison to. Because it's not that it's wrong because it's wrong. It's wrong because it's not bringing you closer to Krishna. Does that make sense? Let's say I'm supposed to be boiling some potatoes. And so I go into the kitchen and I pick up some cauliflowers and I, you know, wash them nicely, cut them. And I, you know, when I cut them into the little flowerets, it's like perfect. Each one's like perfectly the same size, how it's cut and everything like that. So what's wrong here? Yeah, so I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, but what I'm doing is perfect. So if we're working on just perfection of technique, as long as you're doing some management technique, the person will think that they're doing great. What I'm doing, comparing it to whatever system they're using. Does that make sense? So then that's always going to be a problem, because why are you using the system? What's the point? Why are you using that system? How it's favorable to Krishna? That's not being discussed. You know what I'm saying? You know, so for the four quadrants, why four? Why not three? Why not seven? You know what I'm saying? Why is that good? Why is that the measure? It does something. It has a practical thing. But in any of those, was pleasing Krishna part of it? We'll say, oh, of course it's for pleasing Krishna. But that, of course, means you're taking it for granted. Taking it for granted means then there's pride. Pride means it's not for Krishna. It's very simple. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, unless you have something to compare your technique and its results to, how do you know that you are managing? You know what I'm saying? Like here, is it? Prabhu had mentioned he's talking to somebody who's, you know, very well established in the economic field. And his whole focus is just seeing that people are satisfied. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So then that comes up is that if we bring up and say, okay, we're going to get it imagined, what's the technique, what's the mechanics of it, that's probably not going to come up as a discussion. And even if it does, it's just one of the side things. The focus would be more on the mechanics of the business. But the point is for this person, if the people aren't satisfied, there's no point to the mechanics. You can sit behind your desk all day and push buttons on your computer, but if people aren't satisfied, you'll make no profit by all that button pushing. You know what I'm saying? It won't get you anything. So he knows it's there because profit is the goal. Profit's coming from people. They're satisfied. Then you can apply the other mechanics of business. So for us, if Krishna's not and the Vaishnava's not satisfied, then how is it, what's the point of any of it? So we have to understand where it goes. So even though, yeah, it seems so simple, it's the main point. And the other, so it means, when you're dealing on this level, people are so expert that these secondary things just come as a natural thing. You know, it's just like riding a bicycle. It means you don't even have to think about it. You just get on the bicycle and ride. And while you're riding, you can talk, you can think about so many things, you can plan and all that, and you do everything properly. But someone who's first learning how to ride a bicycle, all they can do is focus on riding the bicycle. Right? And for them, that's everything. But the point is learning to ride a bicycle isn't actually the goal. So management, good management, is not a goal. It's just a technique that's used for a goal. Because you manage something to get a result. Okay, that result you could say is a goal, but why the result? The result is for pleasing Krishna. So pleasing Krishna is what you're trying to do. So riding the bicycle is quite far down on the totem pole. Does that make sense? But if one's new at Mass, one that takes it, it's all about that, and you know how they got on the bicycle and this and that, and so many things they'll get into. Oh, you have to get on this way or that way, or so. As long as you get on. You know, you ride the bike, it works. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the point comes down is that we'll get distracted by the technique and by the system itself, but the system is only a tool for actually accomplishing something. Right? And that accomplishment is for the purpose of pleasing Krishna. That makes sense. So until it connects to Krishna, it's indirect. And anything indirect can get distracted. That's the whole point. That's why we say, that's why we, you know, Lord Chaitanya points out that these points of chanting Hare Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deities, living in the Dham, these are direct, because there's nothing in between. You chant Hare Krishna, you're directly dealing with Krishna. Worship the deity directly with Krishna, Bhagavatam directly with Krishna, Vaishnavas directly with Krishna, the Dham directly with Krishna. But anything before that, then it could go somewhere else. You could go out to pick flowers. Right? Now, if you bring them and then those are used in the worship of the deity, then it takes on that. But until that happens, it's not, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it all gets connected once it does. But you could go out and pick flowers a while. These are nice, and then take them home to your mother. You know, then it never makes it to Krishna. So that's the whole thing. Unless you're if you're focused on the deity worship the whole time you're picking flowers, then the flowers will get to Krishna. But if partway through you're picking the flowers, you remember, oh no, today's Mother's Day and all that, and that, then you understand. So. That's why this point of, oh no, it's of course it's about Krishna, isn't enough. Because otherwise, what's to keep you from getting distracted? And even if the person who's saying, you know, of course it's for Krishna, maybe they're able to affect, but is everybody else? Because in the last 2 hours of the meeting, Krishna hasn't been brought up once. You know, so how are they clear? How is it clear? It's about they're efficiently considering how to manage, which is good. They're trying to do that for Krishna. That's their service. But unless it's seen in the context of how it pleases Krishna, you have a lot of options on how you decide the point. Because everything's, you know, basically it's all binary, right? It's this or that. So why that path that you're taking on choosing this or that at each stage? What are you comparing it to? Because if it's not Krishna, you can get off on a, you know, a tangent. You know, so if it's like, oh, we have to, you know, impress people, they think we're nice people, then how do you define nice people? You know what I'm saying? How do you define that? That's the thing, is everybody you talk to will have a different idea of what a nice person is. And some people say there are no nice people. Like, ask Duryodhana, there's no nice people. You know, so that's the whole point, is why do you want nice people, and what's the purpose of the nice being nice? You know, say, oh, but people think good of us. And why are we worried about people think good about us? Oh, well, they'll be more Krishna, you know, open to Krishna consciousness, but they're only open if they come in contact with it. So if they only come in contact with devotees being nice, where's the Krishna consciousness? Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful that it goes beyond. Because otherwise, being nice, then it can come down to just being nice. And then, as we said, depending upon one's conditioning, we'll have our own idea of what's nice and who we're trying to impress. And so then, trying to impress them, it's not necessarily that who we're trying to impress are nice. Does that make sense? So then how can we say that we're moving forward in Krishna consciousness? But if we're functioning from the principle of pleasing Krishna, means then you're seeing, you know, everything in connection with Krishna. So all living entities, you're seeing connection with Krishna. Therefore, you're respectful to all living entities. That's why you're nice. That will then always move you forward to Krishna. And people will notice that. But other niceness, they want to know why you're doing it. Why are you nice? Right? Especially because we're trying to, generally speaking, we're trying to impress the city people. Right? Very few are trying to impress the country people. Country people, you're nice, they take it that you're nice. The city people, you're nice, they want to know why you're nice. Especially the more sophisticated the place. Like New York, there's no reason you'd be nice, so why are you nice? What do you want? Like that. You know, I don't know you, you don't know me, why are you nice? And I told you there was that parody on, I think, BBC One last year. You know, it came on as if it was a regular, what do you call it? They presented it as if it was a regular, you know, broadcast of news. You know, the same, the desk, everybody there, and you know how they have the pictures and this and that. You know, you have the guy there very soberly speaking, yes, you know, so we have this latest thing that's, you know, happening and terrorizing, you know, London itself, is that there's this man from somewhere out, I'm not sure, maybe he's from Wales or someplace, you know, out in the country somewhere. And, you know, he's terrorizing people by, you know, as he passes them on the street, he's asking them, how are they? You know, like this and that, and you know, so, you know, like that, you know, what's, you know, happening here, you know, so many people are distressed, you know, we go to our, you know, correspondent, you know, out in the field, and they go, yes, you know, here with his, and they, you know, talking to things like, yeah, I don't know, you know, you can't talk to me, you know, what does it want, what's going on, what's, you know, what's happening, you know, like this, like that, I feel afraid, you know, I got my kids, and things like that, go that, then finally, they cut to, okay, and now we're with the, you know, who is it, with the guy, I don't know where I'm at, you just walk down the street, you see somebody, you say, hello, how are you? You know, I was just trying to be nice and all that. I didn't know that, you know, you can't do that here in London, you know, like that. And so, you understand? So that's the problem, is that there is no standard of being nice. So this whole idea is that we use this virtuous thing as, okay, we're avoiding sin, but it's sin as we see it, not sin as Krishna sees it. And we follow virtue as we see it, not as Krishna sees it. Virtue means it's connected to him. Sin means it's not. That's the actual definition of virtue, I say. Yes?
Regarding being nice, have you heard such phrase, bombarding with love?
I kind of, yeah.
In Poland, because devotees are nice, and it's kind of difficult to even to find something bad about them. So in Catholic Poland, you know, this anti-sectarian movement, they found fault, and it's bombardment with love.
Okay, that's the devotees'
fault in being nice. So as you said, you cannot be nice for the sake of being nice or pleasing the Lord, but there has to be some nefarious motivation behind this, so they are bombarding with love people to convert them to this, you know, to this sect.
This sect, okay. Even though there's 1 billion Hindus in India, and there's how many Catholics in Poland? Yeah. Somehow or another, and the Hindus are the sect, right? Yeah, like that. that's so funny. Phone by, that's the fault. Too much love. Yeah, what to do? So that's the whole thing. You can't please everybody. Right? Well, even if you're nice, they'll find a fault. Why are you nice? Too nice. You know, not nice enough.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. You also have that. Yeah. So you just have to. See, but here's you're actually trying to be nice. You know, you're not trying to trick somebody. And still, people won't like it. So that's the whole point, is we don't care about trying to please people on the material platform. We try to just behave properly according to the etiquette in Krishna consciousness. That's what we do. We're trying to please Krishna. And in doing that, then all living entities will be pleased. If you try to please the people, then it doesn't happen. It never happens. Yes. Yes. But it doesn't. Does it matter? If Krishna is pleased, does it matter? You know, that's the whole point. Is that you're in the material world, you're not going to please everybody anyway. So then, why worry about it? It means your best shot is at pleasing Krishna. You can't. They can't please themselves. See, you can only, like we were discussing yesterday, satisfaction. So you can only, a person who's trying to be satisfied, you can assist them to be satisfied. But a critical person, then they are not satisfied. There's nothing you can do to please them. Because even if you do something, even if you do what they say you should do, they'll still find fault in it. Because it's not the mood's wrong or this wrong or that's not exactly what I was saying or why you're being so literal. It means the point is they have to find fault. That is their identity. That is their reason for existence. Oh, raison d'être, right? That's the whole purpose. That makes sense? So, you can't please them. So someone like that, you're nice to if you bump into them, but you just avoid. Everybody in the community just avoids them. Right? They'll complain that everyone avoids them, and after a while, then they'll kind of start wondering why. And then you can explain. Well, because the point is finding fault itself is a fault. Right? Because the point is it's only its connection to Krishna that has the value. So if you're fault-finding, then you're not going to see things that are proper. It doesn't mean that there's not things that you can't improve, but you're not seeing things that are proper. So how is that beneficial? Because it's doing the right things is what moves you forward, not avoiding just what's wrong. You avoid what's wrong so you do what's right. See, if I'm doing something wrong, I can't be doing what's right. But to just not do something wrong means, again, I'm back to akarma, I'm doing nothing. So unless you are pointing out what's the right thing to do. Does that make sense? So we understand the standard, and then we try to obtain that standard. Even though we ourselves may not be on that level of consciousness, but we know that that's what we're trying to achieve. And so trying to achieve that, then Krishna will reveal. He will move forward. But if one thinks simply the secondary is all that there is, then according to how closely, according to the laws of nature, you follow that secondary aspect, then Krishna will reciprocate with you. Does that make sense? But it doesn't mean you'll be satisfied, because the soul is never satisfied. That's why the materialists are so grumpy. Right? Because you would think that the more rich they are, the more famous they are, the more beautiful, all this, they'd be happier. But you see, as you go up, they're more and more grumpy. So it's not working. So then, you know, this is given, so we try. Yes. Do you need a bridge?
Not
yet. Means which way you're trying to go.
To the
beginning. Oh. The bridge is application. See, is that you hear, then having heard, you try to inquire, you try to remove doubts and everything, so you're convinced. But being convinced about it, then it has to be that you have to accept it. You understand? Just intellectually knowing its rights, not enough to get realization. You have to actually accept the practice of it. Does that make sense? You have to assimilate it. Because otherwise, if you don't, you won't learn. Does that make sense? So, then by practicing that assimilation, you're taking that, you're applying it, then you're analyzing how well it went, what you could do to make it better, you know, and all this, how you could improve the quality of the Krishna consciousness like this, then you'll get realization through that. Realization means taste. You like doing it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you'll get gyan in the second level, in assimilation, but you get vigyan, that's the third. So you have the understanding like that. It means you have the knowledge. Then by accepting and practicing it, then you get the knowledge. You get an understanding. Then from that continuous practice of the understanding, then you get realization. Does that make sense? Yes? No, it's constructive, but constructive means you're building something. Where is that building going? Right? Like I looking at, okay, there's a foundation. If I'm going to build a foundation, how do I build the foundation? What defines how I build the foundation? Yes, and the building itself. Right? Where I want a wall, I have to put the foundation there. Right? So the building defines the foundation. And what defines the building? How it's going to be used. You know, and then how it's used is then it's going to supposed to give us a particular experience. Right? So if it's about Krishna consciousness, then there's particular activities that should be performed, therefore then there's the foundations that are necessary so you can perform them. So constructive criticism has to show how it goes through to Krishna. Then that's constructive. Because just because it's a good thing doesn't mean that the person accepted it as good. Like, do we have do we have elements of where something proper is instructed to someone, and what is being instructed is proper, but the person is not very happy, right? So you have the element there of you know of course for it to work that both parties have to be there. So if the person is trying to understand and all that, and the other person is trying to explain, then it'll work. But if the other person doesn't want to understand, then just telling them the technique is not going to, because they don't want to do the technique, that's why they're not doing it. But if you explain why they should do it and how that relates to Krishna consciousness, then they may be, in educating them, then they may move up. So constructive criticism needs to be educated. Just to point out the technical thing, unless it's in a context where it's been explained and now you're just reminding them and stuff like that. That's one thing, but the educational part has to be there. Right? Does that make sense? And it has to be explained until it's understood. Is that? Yes, but what's the uplifting? Why is uplifting good? That's the point. It brings you closer to Krishna. So you can't just look at it that the discussion was uplifting. It has to be that it's uplifting because of its connection to Krishna. You understand? Otherwise, uplifting is just virtues. Does that make sense? And so then, if we value, you know, uplifting or upliftment or something like that, we'll just look for things that are like that. So if anything's not like that, we'll consider it bad. You understand? So that's how the material virtue works. We'll define it if it's good or bad. like that, depending upon, you know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say, okay, we want to have a little get together, and so we have the get together, you know, and so for some friends, they get together, and it's, you know, you have that, how you say, that main street on Oxford, and then there's a set of stairs that goes way down. I don't know how it does that. Goes down, and then there's this little courtyard that's there, very small, like that. A little bit bigger than this room, like that. And there's benches on both sides, and there's one or two trees. Then right after that, there's the street, and then London starts again. So they're going to have a get-together there. And so for some, that's great. It's out of the way and everything like that. Others want to get together right in that fast food restaurant. You know, it's all happening, the energy and all that kind of stuff. And like that. And someone else says, no, they want to be out in the park. Or park's not enough. It has to be out in nature. You know what I'm saying? So the difficulty comes is everybody has their idea of what's uplifting. Does that make sense? You know, and then there's the guys that have their, how you say, you know, the little bag and their razor blade, and they call that uplifting. Does that make sense? So the whole point is there's a whole wide variety of what you call uplifting. So therefore, until you connect it to Krishna, then it may be according to our conditioning uplifting, but it's not uplifting to the soul. So we always have to bring the virtues to the point of the soul, and that only comes to that platform of dealing on the level of the soul if it's connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's important to know that. Otherwise, so many discussions that we may have that are dealing with social elements won't get to Krishna. And their basis is not in anything connected with Krishna or the Vedas. But if you challenge it, then they'll say something from somewhere. But it's only being used to support their point. It's not that that's actually what they're trying to obtain. Does that make sense? Okay. Good? Okay. So text 21. Translation. Are you feeling compunction for the unhappy women and children who are left forlorn by unscrupulous persons? Or are you unhappy because the goddess of learning is being handled by brahmanas addicted to acts against the principles of religion? Or are you sorry to see that the brahmanas have taken shelter of administrative families that do not respect brahminical culture? Purport. In the age of Kali, the women and the children, along with the brahmanas and cows, be grossly neglected and left unprotected. In this age, illicit connection with women will render many women and children uncared for. Circumstantially, the women will try to become independent of the protection of men, and marriage will be performed as a matter of formal agreement between man and woman. In most cases, the children will not be taken care of properly, right? Because when you're dealing on this level where it's not about the religious principle, because remember, the religious principle is what goes down in Kali Yuga. So the how you say, the covenant between the man and the woman, like this, so the you know, or the married couple, then that will go, and it'll just be based on sense gratification. And so then it just becomes an agreement. So as long as the what they're looking for on the material platform is there, then it will continue, and then when it's not, it will be broken. That's all. It's that simple. So the difficulty comes down is, therefore, then the children get left out of it. Like the husband and wife, they want a divorce. Okay, it's about them. Right? Because let's say a man and woman come together, and they're husband and wife. Okay? So then coming together, it's a legal contract. Right? But if they decide not to be together, then you can dissolve that legal contract, and they have nothing to do with each other. Does that make sense? You know, especially if they have a restraining order that you can't get within 500 feet of them. You know, so, you know, does that make sense? But now, what about the children? Are their parents not legally, you know what I'm saying? In other words, their parents are their parents no matter what the legal position between the parents. So in other words, the bond of the connection between the children and the parents is actually a stronger position than between the parents themselves. Not as far as the rasa goes, but just a part of the legalities. Does that make sense? You know, so that's not considered. It's always the children, you know, they just go along. They, you know, they're part of the furniture. They should understand. You know, mommy and daddy don't get along. They have to understand. Yes? It's not. But we are sitting in Finland.
No, even in India it's the time now.
Yes. And why? Because they're following Finland. No? So the point is it's not there, but that's what we're meaning, because the connections, it says circumstantially, you know, all these things will come up. And so because they're not taken care of, then the women will make that endeavor, they'll be independent like that, but that independence means also independent of their children. Right, independent of everything. So everybody gets left out. So you're saying, so that's the difficulty in the Kali Yuga. Women, children, along with the brahmanas and cows, they'll always be neglected. It's just the way it goes. Now, of this, there'll be movements for the women, there'll be movements for the children, and there'll be movements for the cows. But there will never be movements for the brahmins. So that's just, yes. Okay.
So this is then also for us, as far as I understand, the Prabhupada is saying that because of the lower quality of the men, the independence, and so on, therefore, what would be the best thing to do, actually, for the world?
See, the thing is independent, see, there's practical and there's independent. You understand? Women are very practical. So then, let me say, one practically does what one needs to maintain one's position. But one has to actually understand and know the nature of what you're dealing with. Because the point is women have to know who they are and what they're dealing with, what children are, what they're dealing with, what, you know, in this case, you know, what Brahmins are, what the cows are, like this, and know what we're dealing with. But otherwise, if we don't, then it's not going to work. You know, just like the women will act like men. But if the men treat the women like men, the women get upset. But at the same time, they're supposed to be equal. That means that you should be able to, you know, you should be able to tell a fart joke like you can to the men to the women, and the women would laugh. But they don't. They get upset. So that means they're not. There's not equality, because there's difference of nature. So the equality we're working with is, you know, elephants, you know, have to eat, you know, 5 chapatis, you know, or the guy has to eat 250 kilos of chapatis, you know, one or the other. That's equality, you know. Or we'll, you know, divide it, you know, whatever it is. The elephant gets 125 kilos of chapatis, and the guy's got to eat that much. Otherwise, it's not equal. So we're not taking it that equal means according to the individual nature. So women, according to their nature, then they have to find their satisfaction. But then to take on a mentality outside of the feminine mentality and expect that it'll work good for themselves or others, you know, then, does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that the science is not understood, so everybody makes trouble for themselves. So the reaction is there. That's why then the men are properly trained, they'll create a nice atmosphere, then the women don't have to change mentality. But it doesn't mean that they're not dynamic and active. You know, that's the problem in the modern culture, is there's, except in the movies, there's no shades of gray, right? It's black or white. Does that make sense? So there's nothing in between. So you can't have a woman who's committed to her household and the family and all these things and performs those duties, but, you know, she's a powerhouse and makes the whole thing work. You know, does that make sense? So the definitions that are being used are very, very non-scientific, and no one's being satisfied by it. So the more independent the women become, it's not that they're becoming more satisfied. You know, and the more the men are doing the women's stuff, it's not that either the women or men are being satisfied either. You know what I'm saying? Let us say the man is out at work all day and the mother is at home with the kids all day. So then when the father comes home, kids are a little shy to be with him. You know, but a little time, then you know, like that. But it's like that every day. But for them, it's not, of course. You know, they're with the mom, mom's there, it's all, you know, like that. And he's cool. And he's just happy the kids are happy and the mom's happy and has a good relationship. Okay? Now, let's say the mom's out and then you have the house husband. And because the house husband's with the kids all day, when she comes home, the kids are a little shy and all that. She's thinking, why am I working? They don't have a relationship with me or this and that. It's a total, absolute mental meltdown. Why? Because she's a woman. She's not a man. So there's differences. So therefore, you want to function in that. Know that it comes with things. You can't have everything. You can't have your cake and eat it. You move in one world, you get the results of that world. You can't say, I'm going to move in this world and get the results of that world. That makes zero sense. Does that make sense? So we have to appreciate that the nature of everything is already created by Krishna. Say what we want, but in the primary creation before Brahma, the 8,400,000 species and all the varieties and the masculine and feminine, all that's been created. Mountains, valleys, riversides, countrysides, beaches, you know, ocean. Everything's already been created and its nature. And say what we want and all this, you can't go against that. You say, oh, but mechanically they're doing... Who said mechanically they can't do the same? I mean, men like to... foolish men will think that, okay... You know, we're men because we can do this mechanical aspect. Women can't. But the point is women don't, because why should they? The guy's doing it. You know what I'm saying? Why would the woman open the can of beans when the man's already doing it? You know what I'm saying? You know, they're smarter. So the whole thing is that this idea that it's certain things that you're doing, that's what makes the masculine and feminine. No, it's a mentality. And then with the mentality, then you match. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. Is that unless the science is understood, it won't function. So that's the thing, in the age of Kali, the science, nobody cares about it, because it's all as we see. It's about themselves. Because to understand the science means that there must be knowledge, that knowledge, then there must be endeavor. So there has to be sacrifice. So people aren't willing to make any sacrifice. So neither the men nor the women, and then the children lose out. And then those children grow up without proper input from the parents, and then they don't care for anybody. Then they're even more self-centered. And then the parents later on, oh, what happened? What went wrong? You know, it's you know, I say, age-old story.
Both within our own, but also in society, that because there are these five groups according to Vedic culture to
right. Protect.
We have to be protected, the cows,
yes.
Women, children, Brahmins, and old people.
Right.
So both in society and.
It's just wherever you have living entities, you have this.
Yeah, but there has been there is an ongoing concern. Even the cows now in society, although it's a fanatical center, but and also
it's always fanatical.
Women and children, but you mentioned Brahmins not.
Oh no, because they're authority, and if you're in a society from a background where you're anti-authority, then you can never support Brahmins. You don't understand the position, because when you say top, that means that's the control, that's the authority, because we take it that the administration is the top. So the Brahmins, then they'll be that, and so we don't want to listen to authority, because we don't want to be another brick in the wall. All right? And so we do our own thing. So that you'll never get. And only because devotees are starting to get it in their 60s and 70s is there even any consideration of old people. But otherwise, you know, up to just a few years, no one cared about old people either. So it's only as you get more and more old people, then that part will come up. But guaranteed Brahmins will never come up.
Like you see also in history, Socrates was killed.
Yeah.
Sentenced to death, and he was just making people think. Or
yeah.
Nothing else, just walking and talking.
I mean, he should know better, right? People don't like to think. I mean, what happened to Beckett? Didn't work out for Beckett either. Beckett. He was the cardinal of, been a long time. With a CH?
St. Paul's Canterbury.
Canterbury, yeah. Thomas Beckett, Canterbury. Like that. And Richard, because he would always correct him, because he's the Brahmin, he's correcting the king. I think it was Richard II, was it?
Henry
II. And so then one time he's sitting there because he just got chastised by him, and his guards are there, and he said, who's going to, you know, who can free me of this guy, like that. So the two guys said, okay, we can do it, you know, and they went off and killed him, brought his head. He was not very happy. He was just upset that, you know, being the king, he has this, you know, cardinal telling him what to do. But, you know, he would go along. They were best friends. But, you know, the point is that it's always there. It's always there in history. They always go down, you know. I think Tolstoy went down with the ice pick. You know, it's just, you know, that's how it just goes. Is that you know, how we say Pol Pot? He specifically went after anybody who was smart. If you wore glasses, you wore glasses because you read. So then you read, you must be smart, and even though they have glasses because of something else, you know. So he would kill them if they wore glasses. So I think he killed like 2 million people. And then somehow or another he thinks that his state will go on nicely without any brains. But, you know, it's a, and he went to Sorbonne. So he picked up his revolutionary ideas there in France. You know, so they have a history of, you know, just like that. So that's the difficulty, is that because there's no sense of authority, therefore Brahmins won't be. So only with those who have a sense of authority, then you can add in that. That's why in this, you, like you said, you'll have a movement for women, but it's not a movement for these five. You understand? When all five are taken together as important, that's called human. If you just take one of them and make an issue out of that, that's just a mundane social political position. You know what I'm saying? Because that's all. Because it's just animals, you have to take care of animals. But it's not that the cows are important, or why the cows are important. Otherwise, the cows are important because they give milk. Milk is because it refines the finer brain tissues, and milk is what you offer to Krishna. Krishna, of all the foodstuffs, the most favorite for Krishna is dairy products. Like that. You know, that's the thing in Braj. It's all dairy products. You know, along with the dairy, you have some grains or some fruit or, you know, like that. So, but it's not about the milk and about the offering to Krishna or about eating it in the finer brain tissues. It'll just be, it's about the cows, and so we completely ignore them because we live in the city and we don't do anything for cows anyway. And so by us ignoring them, in other words, by akarma, somehow or another, everything will be great for them. So it's purely a mental political position. There's no practical. You know, you want to do something, support a goshala. Either go there, do work, give money, do something. But no. You know what I'm saying? So it's a political position. The women, it's also based on the modern concept, not on the Vedic concept. You know, the kids also. So women, it'll be, you know, how you say, support the cows as anti-Brahmins. So support the women as anti-Brahmins. So support the children as anti-Brahmins. Right? I don't think you're going to have a problem with supporting old people. They'll be anti-Brahmins. So that one will probably be a little bit more mellow. Right. Yes?
Since we are also operating this civilization, so we are also affected by move. So how, what would be the symptoms that
attachment to
work? Prophets are not put over prophets as physical missions, but still within that community mission, what it would be the symptoms in the movement that prophets are actually not evaluated.
Because someone who does full-time service is not valued. Someone who's just committed to the mission is not valued. You know, like that. I think we had one temple. They were, you know, had so many temples, devotees there. There were pujaris doing the service in the temple and all that, being maintained by the temple. Someone wanted more than what the temple could arrange. And they made such a scene about it that told them they had to go. Then someone else is there, then they're complaining, why are they being maintained? You wouldn't maintain us, but you're maintaining them, even though they were just getting the regular amount. So then the temple made the policy that everybody had to leave. So then it had to be only community, they come forward and do puja service. You can't have live-in pujaris that the temple takes care of. And the reason that they can't is that if they do, then those in the community who want to be taken care of by the temple, but at their own standard, not at a Brahminical standard, then will complain. So you can't have. So this is a direct example of you can't support Brahmins because the community is not independent enough or pious enough, or you know, like that kind of thing. That makes sense. Well, you see, like in Chopati, there the community happily gives and takes care of them. So they do no collection. The temple, the brahmacharis do no collection. They only preach. Because according to the Vedic tradition, so the householders do all that. So anything to do with money, like the accounts, raising money, spending money, doing all that, that the grihasthas do, the community does. So they have a big festival that costs lakhs. They raise it. The temple doesn't have to raise it. The brahmacharis simply have to preach. They just have to inspire the grihasthas so that they have direction. They know what to do. That's protecting the brahmacharis, the brahmins. So that's the difficulty, is that there's no concept of that. And so then there's no trust in it, you know, like Prabhu was saying, you know, you're nice, why are you nice? You know, they're too nice. Like that. Okay. Yes?
As we just discussed with someone who preaches in Europe, it seems to be really nice to have this question. It's like they said, if you would be cleaner or car driver in the temple, you would be maintained.
Yeah, because it's like service has to be free, but it's like kind of like it is. You're just, it's part of the maintenance, you know. You know, the floor is rendering service, but you're taking care of that. Why you wouldn't take care of this? So it's also a misnomer that devotional activities, then the temple can't give anything for them. You know, but the point is it's a matter of how much it works. You know, it means, in other words, what the temple can afford, that's what you get. And if you're cool with that, then you do. And if not, then hey, you know, it's a big world out there. So it's a matter of balance. Sometimes we get our own ideas of what's proper. You know, just like sometimes we get the idea that when Rupa Goswami says 50% of your money is given in charity, and given in charity means generally in some places the ideas to the temple administration, and that means you can't give outside of that. In fact, I think there's rules technically that you can't give outside of that unless they approve. So then, but that's not what Rupa Goswami says. It's 50% of what you would get. Like if I run a business, let's say you've invested 10,000 euros and all that, maybe from that I might get back 500 in the beginning. So they're taking it, no, you have to give us 5,000, which will never work in any of the 14 planetary systems, you know, let alone here, you know. Does that make sense? So that means, no, it's from the 500. That's where they consider. But he's gotten 500 from that, But the point is he reinvesting or anything in this or taking, you know, other things? I mean, after expenses and that, he's got 500. But now he could also reinvest part of that. But it'll be demand. No, then even if it's that, no, you have to give us 250. But he wants to reinvest, you know, 200 of that. So he only has 300. So now we're talking 150. You know. But these kind of things aren't done. So then people won't work with the temples. Most people will not do business with our temples because of this misunderstanding. So that's the thing, is that we create our own concepts and they're unviable. And then we'll say they're insincere. You know, that's the catch-all phrase. You know, just like you're not your body, Prabhu. That one gets all the things done, and if that doesn't work, then and they fall apart, then you're not sincere, right? You know, that's a standard thing that everybody uses, you know. Like that. You hear a little less of it now, but that was very popular back in the, you know, the 70s, 80s, like that. So that's the difficulty, is that what we're talking about here is that leadership then has an understanding. They understand the culture and all that. Therefore, they're able to deal in such a way that they're able how much they can cultivate the community, cultivate, have devotees doing service in the temple and all those. But the point is it has to be understood. It'll be according to their facility. You can't expect more. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it's a lifestyle, and that you're willing to live that, you accept that. You can't say, well, I'll only move into the temple if, you know, I get insurance and dental or something. You know, if everybody's got, great, but if nobody has, then you can't expect that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. It goes both ways. Is that brahminical means you accept what the Lord gives. Right? And administration means they give the best they can. Right, but when the Brahmins are thinking, no, the temple should give the best they can, and the temple is thinking, no, you should just be satisfied with whatever Krishna gives you, you have a problem. So in other words, everybody knows their duty and sticks to that. So that's why we're saying, is that if you check so many of the different difficulties that we have, the social difficulties and other things like that, are because of not understanding how it connects to Krishna, what is the culture. So that's why we're putting such an emphasis on that. Because technique, someone's a good manager, they can manage. That's the point, is managers can manage, you know, it's not a big deal. You know, does that make sense? You know, birds can fly. It's not that, it's that, you know, they had, you know, they're there in the nest like that, and, you know, they're there and checking out their wings and stuff like that, and they've been doing it for a few days, and then the parents just come up and bump them, you know. And it's, you know, they either hit the ground or they fly. And they generally always fly. You know, it's a tried and true method for getting the kids to fly. And so they can fly. They're not afraid of heights. That's the only thing. Birds are not afraid of heights. They don't get vertigo. You know, they sit there on the edge of things looking at it. They have no problem. So the same way managers can manage. They know what to do. But the point is if unless they understand the philosophy and culture, the religion, then the management may be going on, but the effectiveness in Krishna consciousness may be lacking. So that's why it's there. That's why you can point out some technique, but it's only of value if you see it in context of the culture. You understand? So the point is Brahmins, because they do this service for Krishna all the time, that's what's there. So someone who's doing full-time brahminical service, then if they can be supported, that's nice. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, generally speaking, they're not always that great at making money. And so they'll make money, but then you hardly get any service out of them because it takes them so long to make money. Like that. You know, some of them are really sharp, but they have the ideas, they're brahminical, but they have, you know, their knowledge is within these areas, then they can do quite well. They also have that. But then you won't have to take care of them either. You know. So the point is they can do that service for Krishna. That's why it's valuable. Right? The women, then they support the whole system, they take care of the children, means you have the Grihastha ashram is the center of the whole social system. And the only reason that you have Grihastha is because of women. It's not because you have men, it's Grihastha, it's because you have women. You know what I'm saying? Women are already living the Grihastha lifestyle. Men aren't. So when men get married, they join that. Does that make sense? So that's the... But men are part of the brahmachari scene. Right? And then they can join what's going on there. So the women are the center of that. And then from that you have children. Then you have to take care of the children. The more input you put into the children, then the more the children can do. Like if you give a lot of attention to the children, they, when they grow up, can give a lot of attention to others. But you don't give attention to them when they grow up, they can't give attention. It's just not, it's not part of the, you know, it's like a battery. You don't charge it, you can't do anything with it. So that means it's very important. Well, nowadays, then kids aren't taken care of because the parents are all professionals and all that. And then the problem comes is then we wonder why they're doing their own thing and in their own world and only about themselves, because that's what they've been at home all day. And so what do? They play video games. You know, there's a good chance he's not at home all day, therefore he's going to do the laundry and vacuum the rug. You know, and so then they wonder why are the kids like this. So that's the whole point. If you don't take care of these, and if you don't take care of the cows, you don't get the milk, so you don't get the finer brain tissues, so you can't understand this anyway.
Yeah. But it's like the prophet preaches those two. It's like, let's say, like something like school teaching in the school. It took maybe 15 years. So it's all like, that's the history. Nobody will remember school that you know.
Right.
Manner or something like that. It's like, you know.
That's there, but the point is we have to work on what's at present. You can't base what you're going to do practically on the past. It means you'll consider it, but you can't make up for it. It's a matter of what's there now. Then you move forward accordingly. And so whatever is anybody can do, then they do their best. That's the principle that you're working with, is that in trying to apply these principles, then you see what you can do the best in the situation you're in. Because as you said, things take time to develop. You know, it's just like Chopati we see now is a big, you know, community, and probably for the last, you know, 10 years it's been kind of known like that. But for 20 years before that, it was just one couple's a single, basically, room apartment. Like that. That's all it was. And that's where it started from. And then they go, and then, they, you know, slowly. So they developed it through community. And then from that, slowly, the ashram built, and everything like that. So those things no one will see. It's like the building. No one notices the foundation. If you do construction, the foundation is sometimes the most amazing part of the building. What's there, which what's there and everything like that. Like the Samadhi in Mayapur, that foundation is really far out because it's a huge building and it's built, you know, right next to the Ganga. So it's all on sand. It's all in water. So it's a floating foundation. So what's down there is wild. Like that, you know, or in some of these old buildings in Italy, the old churches, big, huge cathedrals, and they go downstairs and they see something that there's some gaps in, you know, in something like that, and so then they decide, oh, we can use this space, and they fill it in. And the building's been there for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, no problems, not a crack, they fill it in, cracks start. They analyze back, get all the engineers, and they figure out it's because they closed up those gaps. Those gaps were built there 500 years ago for the building to flex and all that. And they don't know that. You know what I'm saying? So, the foundation, but even though it's so amazing, you just have to go by what's there. You know, it's like the buildings here, like this building's here. We use the building, we don't know what's downstairs. So it's what you can do with what you have right now. Does that make sense? So that's what we have to move forward with. And then whatever that's there, whatever facility, you try to do your best, like that.
It's like a little discouraging you to the long-term plan, to the long-term benefit, someone other.
But the point is what you have to remember is that in long-term plans, the main thing of long-term plan is pleasing Krishna, becoming Krishna conscious. Because these other things will fall by the wayside. Just like, let's say, just as, you know, since we're on architecture. As far as I've seen, the most amazing building, architectural, you know, edifice that there is in the world is the Radha Govinda temple in Vrindavan. What's there is 1/5 of what was there originally, because the Mughals dismantled 4/5 of it because it was so amazing, because they'd make Taj Mahal and this and that, and from there they could see the light on top of Govindaji. They had such a huge lamp, oil lamp on the top, they could see it from the Taj Mahal, which is like, I don't know what it is, 100 kilometers, something ridiculous, that they were freaking out. So they went there and dismantled it. So what's left there is one-fifth. And so Rupa Goswami's there, you know, he's there sitting under his tree. Then Mansingh comes, he does this, he wants to do, he can engage himself, he can do big stuff, he does all that. And Govindaji lives there. Then, you know, the things come, the Mughals attack like that, Govindaji goes to Jaipur, and he lives in this little, you know, simple place, a Haveli. Which basically means, Havelis means their houses. So there came a thing where they started building temples that look like houses, because if they look like houses, the Mughals wouldn't bother them. If they're temples, they'll go and bother them. But if it looks like somebody's house, they leave them alone. And he lives there, and he's been there ever since. So that means this whole endeavor, 20 years, it took 20 years to build. And this is Mansingh, he's the, you know, the general of Akbar. So that means he has facilities. So he'll probably have a lot of people that are working. But it took him 20 years to build it. But it just disappears. And Krishna, that's not what Krishna is. He's worried about the devotion. So the point is whatever efforts put in our long-term plans, that devotion, that always remains. But the external form, that comes and goes with how the world works. So something's there, and then it disappears, and it comes back later, and then that. But the devotion remains, so we have to see is that's the main thing. Like that. We can't go by the secondary. Like that. Does that make sense? The eternal benefit is there. So even if not, it's just the way it goes. That's why you see is that, man, he gets married, he goes through the whole thing, the children are there, they grow up, he tries to establish everything, establishes, you know, the money and economics. But at some point, he just leaves and goes to the forest because he can't do anything. You know, it's up to the next generation. They have to take care. So that's why it shifts back into the spiritual. Okay, we'll stop here. Then we'll go again. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.
Jai.